This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton, local author and historian, joins us on Friday afternoons to talk a little history. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm good. And what did you bring with you today?
Well, I got a bunch of stuff, but first I wanted to plug a few things that I've got going on, and I wanted to tell the folks that
I saw a big article about you in the Senior Center newspaper.
Yeah, right on the front cover. You didn't know I had written that, though.
I did not know, but yeah. It's still a great article.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks
and,
a lot.
And I feel this way very strongly. If there is going to be an article about you in the newspaper, you should write it. I don't care who you are.
Sure. Make Mama proud.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've got this, I've got a great series coming up. I'm a host and the organizer of this great series that's coming up at the Senior Center. It starts in April and it runs all the way through October. I think I've mentioned it once before. Folks who want some more information can go to the Senior Center website, and that's CharlottesvilleSeniorCenterInc.org or SeniorCenterInc.org. Forget about the Charlottesville at the beginning. But what it is it's a lecture and day trip series. On the third Wednesday of every month, we hear a lecture about a battle or a campaign in the Civil War in Virginia. The very next week, go to see that battlefield. And so really, it's the best kind of way to learn about this Civil War in Virginia, to experience a Civil War. You learn a little bit about the battle, then go see it on the ground, because you really have to go out there to really get the real picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Of what it was like.
Yeah. Where are some of the places you're going to be taking folks?
We're going to First Manassas. We're going to Cross Keys, Port Republic. We're going to Brandy Station, which was the largest cavalry battle in the Civil War. We're going to Fredericksburg. We're going to Pamplin Park to see part of the Petersburg trenches, some of the works, Robert E. Lee's works. And then we're going to Sailor's Creek and Appomattox.
Wow. You're going everywhere.
Yeah, we're going to a lot of really great sites.
What was Port Republic? Because all I know is the name. What was that battle in a nutshell?
Cross Keys and Port Republic were the two battles at the very end of Jackson's spring of 1862 Valley Campaign. And at Cross Keys and Port Republic, he fended off, defeated two Federal forces, and sent them scurrying back down the Shenandoah Valley.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's the capstone. It's the two victories at the very end of the Valley Campaign.
And where is that Port Republic?
Port Republic is just east, is just a little bit closer than Harrisonburg. And basically, it is, if you can picture how Massanutten works.
Yeah.
Massanutten, that big Massanutten that runs up and down the middle of the
Valley. It's like a mountain right in the middle of the valley.
It is, and it divides the valley into the Shenandoah Valley, and on this side, the Luray Valley, or
yeah.
Some people call it the Page Valley, but I like to call it the Luray Valley. But anyway, yeah. the very bottom face of Massanutten looks down onto Port Republic.
Oh, okay.
So from the little town you look up, you see the bottom.
Have you ever been to the caverns at Luray?
I have.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, you got to go.
We took the kids out there last summer.
There's a bunch.
Just incredible.
There's a bunch of ones up there. There's some great ones. There's some other ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Mammoth? Is that
Mammoth? Mammoth Cave? I've heard of that.
Yeah. There's a bunch of them up
there. So when does this whole Civil War...
This starts in April, and it runs every month through and including October. April through October. Yeah.
And it's one a month.
There's one a month. The third Wednesday is the talk. The fourth Wednesday is the trip of every single month. Yeah.
And you don't have to be a senior to participate, right?
You don't have to be a senior. You don't have to be a member of the Senior Center. And all of the lectures are free and open to the public.
Cool.
So come on down and hear them.
And the lectures are free? The lectures are free.
The trips cost because we have to rent the bus.
Yeah, you got to pay for the gas.
The bus is kind of
expensive. This is America, after all. We got to pay for the gas.
That's right. But it's a lot of fun. Typically, we'll fill up the whole bus. We'll get 35, 40, 45 people. And it's a great way, you know, it's a big gang of folks, it's a lot of fun, put a keg in the back,
bring
some sandwiches, great time.
What is your feeling? You see these battlefields, and they all look like pristine parks. I mean, it's just so incredibly ironic. They're some of the most beautiful, peaceful places in the world. It's so hard to stand there in some of these places and imagine the utter chaos and travesty that was visited upon such a scene.
That's true, but that's why it's good to have a tour guide like me to describe all the awful stuff that happened there.
Yeah,
that's why you want somebody telling you about
it.
And
you don't go to the Wilderness on this tour, not this year.
No, not the Wilderness or Chancellorsville. I'm interested in those battles. I've written a little bit about those battles. The problem I have with them is they're very hard to take people to and explain because it's mostly wooded. There aren't any places where really, I mean, there are a few, but not a lot, where you can stand on a hill and you have this vista and you can really explain.
Yeah.
Like at First Manassas. First Manassas is great that way. You stand up on Henry House Hill and you can see pretty much the whole battlefield one spot. And that makes it easier to explain. People can understand it better.
And the wilderness, of course, as its very name suggests, was a horrible battle right in the thick of the woods.
Right in the thick of the woods. And the woods caught on fire. The wounded, died in the flames. It was just awful.
Yeah. Amazing. Rick Britton joins us on Friday afternoons. Local author, historian, recently completed his manuscript for a new book, which will, will be out in a few months, about Thomas Jefferson.
Couple months, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Congratulations.
And you've got a book coming out about Thomas Jefferson, too.
They're going to...
I think at the same time.
They're going to do a second edition of my Thomas Jefferson on Leadership.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're at the same publisher.
How about that?
And I think they're going to come out at the same time.
Are they really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
That is pretty cool.
We'll have to have a party.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, a book
signing. So we're talking about some women from Albemarle County and Charlotte.
Yeah. Actually, the first set of ladies are not from Albemarle County. They moved here. We're talking about initially Irene and Nancy Langhorne, and they were the daughters of Chiswell Dabney Langhorne. His nickname was Chili. It's fairly well to do, and they moved here to Western Albemarle County in 1894 and purchased Mirador, which is out there, which is just
in Greenwood.
Beautiful estate out in Greenwood. Now, they both became incredibly famous. They had another sister by the name of Phyllis, and Phyllis didn't become famous. Of course, the whole family is well-to-do, so they're famous in that sense. But Irene married the world-famous illustrator Dana Gibson, and then she became the model for his illustrations, his kind of fashion illustrations. So she became the first Gibson girl. And I know folks who have read a little bit about that time are familiar. These were used in advertising, and those illustrations were very, very famous.
And this was back
in
when
the newspapers and magazines.
Whenever you wanted to have a pretty woman in an advertisement,
you
went to this illustrator.
You hired an illustrator.
And he would give you a quote-unquote Gibson girl.
That's right.
To use in your ad.
And so Irene.
She was the first one.
Right. Irene, that way, the wife of the illustrator, she set the standard. She became the original Gibson girl, and so she set the standard. So evidently, they were very lovely. Nancy, in a way, you could say, was more famous. She married Astor. She became Lady Astor, the first woman to sit in the British House of Commons. She married Lord Astor. And my two favorite Churchill quotes. Churchill, I don't know if people know this, but Churchill was actually a journalist, a war correspondent for a while, and he covered...
I never knew that.
...the Boer War.
He was a journalist, really?
He was a
Before
journalist.
Before he got into politics.
That's right. He covered the Boer War, and my favorite quote of his is from the war. He says, there's nothing quite so exhilarating as to be shot at to no effect. So he's sitting on this hill, he's writing this article, he's sitting on this horse on this hill, and some of the Boers are sniping at him, but of course they're missing, and he thought that was pretty exhilarating. But my second favorite has to do with Lady Astor. They're sitting there at dinner, and I know folks are familiar with this. It's a super famous quote. Lady Astor and Churchill didn't really get along, and so they had been seated next to each other, perhaps so that people could enjoy the fireworks. But at one point, she turns to him and says, Churchill, if you were my husband, I would poison your tea.
Ooh.
Yep. And
so
Churchill,
they weren't on the same side of the political equation.
No, they weren't. But Churchill turned to him and said, Madam, if you were my wife, I would drink it.
Ooh. So this is Lady Astor.
Lady Astor, who lived here at Mirador.
They grew up out there. They were sort of like the Hilton sisters. Very rich, wealthy.
Very close.
Well known.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the media.
Yeah, very, very close analogy.
I guess you just have to imagine.
I hadn't thought about that.
If Paris Hilton went to Congress, then that might be a similar type
of, oh, God,
to complete
forbid.
The analogy.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid. Now, this other lady had some more probably humble beginnings. We're talking about Maud Coleman Woods. And she was the daughter of Micaijah Woods, born right here in Charlottesville, Virginia, and his wife, Matilda Morris Minor Woods. They lived out on High Street. She was born in on August 22nd, 1877. And growing up, people noticed her beauty, her loveliness. Growing up, she was compared to Hebe. the Greek goddess of youth, spring, and vigor. She was oftentimes referred to as Virginia's loveliest daughter. A friend of the family was Thomas Nelson Page. And I don't know if that name sounds familiar, but at the time, around the turn of the century, he was like the Virginia novelist. And he wrote a lot of novels about the Civil War, as you can imagine. He was the novelist. He knew the family, and he wrote this about her in 1901. Blessed as this young daughter was with the refined beauty that belonged to her by inheritance, she was to those who had the happiness to know her yet more distinguished by the sweetness and purity of her nature. To her graces was early added the crowning beauty of simple and unaffected Christian piety, which had descended to her with her blood from generations of saintly women.
Golly! Whoa.
What kind of language? Talk about Moonlight and Magnolia.
Man.
Kind of language. Her mother...
She was a looker then.
She was a hottie.
Yeah,
she was definitely a hottie.
And this put this this is in Charlottesville. When is
we're
this
talking
again?
About in Charlottesville, Virginia, right around the turn of the 20th century.
Okay.
When she came of age, when she became 20. She studied at the Virginia Female Institute in Stanton, and she studied under, interestingly, Flora Cook Stewart, who was the widow of Jeb Stuart, who had been mortally wounded at Yellow Tavern in 1864 outside of Richmond during the Civil War. But her father, of course, was a Confederate veteran. He had served in Jackson's horse artillery. He had been at 2nd Manassas, Sharpsburg, Gettysburg, Winchester, Fisher's Hill. After the war, he came back to Charlottesville, studied law at the University of Virginia, graduated in 1868 from the law school. And then soon thereafter, evidently he was pretty good. Soon thereafter, he became a Commonwealth attorney for the county of Albemarle. Now, he was also involved in some of the early veterans organizations. And the first one at the time was the UCV. That's the United Confederate Veterans, because, you know, nowadays it's the Sons of Confederate Veterans. But in those days, a lot of veterans were still alive.
Yeah,
and so this was the organization. And they had their little to-dos. They would get together in 1898. He was serving his fifth year as Brigadier General of the 2nd Brigade of the Virginia UCV. So that very same year, the UCV was holding a huge reunion in Atlanta, Georgia. We're talking about 1898, so Maud would have been 22 years old.
And this is her dad who was
this
in the organization.
This is her dad,
veteran, yeah.
Right, so the dad took her along. She went down there, and they produced this little brochure. And they used her photograph. So she represented the Army of Northern Virginia. They had different ladies who were daughters of veterans who were photographed to represent the different units, the different Confederate armies. So she represented the Army of Northern Virginia, which was her dad's army, in the convention's Rosebud Garden of Girls. And so her photograph, the budding young ladies.
Yeah.
So they produced a little brochure. Now, we have to understand that the name, her name was not attached to this brochure. So here's a photograph of a beautiful young lady.
The Army of Northern Virginia.
And this is, this is a point that everybody has to understand to be able to grasp what happened back then. It was a totally different time. You know, not too long ago, ambition was actually considered a sin. I mean, if you read what George Washington wrote in some of his principles to live by, you know, one of them was not to show ambition. Ambition was considered a sin.
Yeah. Well, back then they didn't run for office.
You didn't run
very
for office.
Bad form.
Your friends went and did all the stuff for you.
Ran for president, he stayed at Monticello.
That's right.
To stand up and say, I want to do that.
And in a similar fashion, women were not allowed to be represented in the newspapers and the magazines if they were pure with their names. So it was considered immoral because it was too forward for a lady to be identified, to have her photograph identified in print, in a book, in a newspaper, in a magazine.
Yeah.
It was considered immoral because women are not supposed to be that forward.
Yeah.
That's impure. That's not Christian. Okay, so we have to understand that to figure out, to get what happened. It's a fascinating story. So here's this little brochure. It gets circulated, and it gets picked up by Alexander Black. Now, Alexander Black was 39 years old in 1898. He was a New Yorker. By that time, he'd already written quite a bit. He produced a History of Ohio in 8 volumes. That was published in 88. A novel by the name of Miss Jerry that came out by Scribner's, Capital Courtship, but also photography was a hobby of his. And so he was starting to write books that combined text and photographs. And this was something kind of new at the time. I mean, it had been happening for a little while, but not that long. So it was still something kind of new. So he had this idea. In fact, he had put out a book 10 years earlier, Photography Indoors and Out. So he came up with an idea that he entitled Miss America. And what he was going to do, he was going to write about the idea. The thesis was that America had the most beautiful young women in the world. And he wrote this, you know, I've read a lot of the text, and it's really flowery. It's way, way over the top.
Yeah.
But he went around and he photographed these women. So he had seen this brochure that had been produced by the UCV, by the United Confederate Veterans. And he was determined that he was going to include Maud because she was so lovely. Little Maud Coleman Woods from Charlottesville, Virginia, was going to be included in this book. So he came down here in 98, in the spring of 98. Now, the problem was the father, because here's Alexander Black, a New Yorker, and he's saying to this family,
Bringing a camera
into the house on High Street.
Take some pictures of your daughter.
That's right. And I want to put pictures of your daughter in the book. Now, the veteran, Mukhija, says, well, that's just not proper. That can't be done.
Ain't going to happen, boy.
I can't allow you to put the photograph and identify her by name. So Alexander Black promises. He says, what if I give you my word that I won't identify her by name? And it's kind of surprising, but the Confederate veteran, Mukhija Woods, Commonwealth attorney, he relented. So Maud sat for a series of photographs on High Street in Charlottesville. Now, I've seen the book. You can go up to Alderman Library and check out a copy. They've got one in special collections.
When did it come out?
It came out the very next year, so in 99.
1899. And the title was Miss America.
Miss America. Now, we talked about this off during the commercial.
But before we go there, hold on just 1 minute.
Sure.
Phone lines are always open, folks. You know you can join the conversation at any time. Terry has chosen to do so. Terry's on line one. Terry, you're on with Rick Britton. Go right ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to tell him one book that he would kill to see.
What's that?
I have a book about, it's called The Portraits of an Era. It's 381 pages. It's drawn by Charles Dana Gibson and signed by Charles Dana Gibson's son.
Wow. Yeah, that would be fantastic.
I'm so glad to show it to you. It's illustrated with all Gibson's pictures in it.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That's great. Terry, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks,
appreciate
Terry.
You're quite welcome.
There you go. Terry on one. And Rick, we're going to continue that story right on the other side of this break. We'll find out what happened with this young woman from Charlottesville, the first, arguably the first Miss America.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, thanks to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you want to get involved with the show, feel free to comment on our blog at sevillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins us on Friday afternoons to talk a little history, and we are hearing the story of the first Miss America.
That's right.
Who was from Charlottesville, Virginia. And this was sort of, what's the connection between this book this guy did that's basically just pictures of pretty women from around the country,
right,
and the Miss America pageant?
Well, the Miss America pageant, I think, started at Atlantic City in the teens, so it's almost two decades after this book came out, and I've researched and tried to make a connection. Now, there is a possibility that, you know, the people who founded the Miss America pageant saw this book and thought, hey, that's a great name, Miss America.
Sure.
That might be the case, but I have not been able to prove that. I haven't found the definite connection linking those two things together.
But
it is a possibility.
This book came out in 1899.
Miss America. It came out by Scribner's. The author and the photographer, Alexander Black of New York. At the time it came out, then he would have been 40 years old. It's full of photographs. The text is, as you can imagine, is very, very flowery. By far and away, Maud Coleman Woods from Charlottesville is the most lovely young lady In the book, there are dozens of photographs.
Now, you're not just saying that because you're from Charlottesville.
I'm not just saying that. You really need to look. It's pretty obvious. And I'll tell you in a moment, and you'll have to agree when I tell you this fact in a moment. He uses three photographs of her in the book, one on page 88, one on page 106, but he put Maude Coleman Woods on the cover of the book.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go.
In an oval. So Alexander Black himself, the New York photographer, is saying, this is the most gorgeous lady.
Yeah.
She's wearing a, in the photographs that were taken right here in High Street, she's wearing a kind of a revealing off-the-shoulder silk bodice. One in particular is really nice. She's sitting on a chair, and her hands, her arms are almost forming a circle, and it's almost like she's about to reach up and greet somebody or maybe reach up and hug somebody. But it kind of transcends time. It really does, this photograph. It's really pretty amazing. Here's some of the text. I told you about his premise in the book. In it, Alexander Black asserts, the evidence in favor of, this is a direct quote, the evidence in favor of the proposition that the United States grows more pretty and witty women to the acre than any other country in the world is overwhelming. It is the United States girl I'm talking about.
Like
it,
a crop.
It, exactly. It is the United States spirit which I have sought to discover. I may be permitted, I hope, to express to the American girls who have sat before my camera my regret that I should have translated them so inadequately. It would indeed be hard to do justice to the American girl.
Wow.
So it came out in 98, 99. The Woods get the book. They get a copy of the book delivered, express mail to their house. There's no name in there. She's not named. Doesn't say where she lives. Doesn't say who it is.
And that was part of the deal.
Mikijah Woods is happy. 2 years pass. 1901, and the New York World, the newspaper, is holding a competition for the women who are going to represent North and South America in the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York. Now, that's the one where the U.S. president was shot and killed. McKinley was shot and killed. The Pan American Exposition to be held in Buffalo, New York. And all of a sudden, the newspapers come out that Maude Coleman Woods had been named by the readers of the New York World America's most beautiful blonde to represent North America. How had this happened? Well, Alexander Black had gone against his word and had submitted photographs of Maude Coleman Woods to the competition against the wishes of the family and won. Now, they had a great painter, and and I was just looking at it before I came because I wanted to be able to describe it to you. They picked a beautiful brunette to represent South America and a beautiful blonde, Maude Coleman Woods, to represent North America, and he painted them so that their figures with their flowing gowns fill up the continents, and they are reaching to touch each other through Central America, and that's what Central America. So there is Maude Coleman Woods representing North America, and it's kind of funny. One of her feet coming out is Florida from beneath the gown is the little hook of Florida.
So she did then go represent America at the...
No, she was mortified because this is exactly what the family hadn't wanted. She was identified to the world that 1 week when this came out. All of the major newspapers across the United States had Maude Coleman Woods' photograph on the front cover and her name. She was identified to the world. In shame, she retreated to a family estate, another family estate in the Woods family, on the James River, Claremont. It's outside of Richmond in Hanover County. And unfortunately, while she was there, she contracted typhoid fever and died.
Oh, my Lord.
And is buried in...
awful.
And is buried in Maplewood Cemetery.
Which right here, right?
Right, yeah. Right here, just north of town.
Oh, man, what a story.
Yeah.
The first Miss America didn't like it and then died.
Right.
Well, that's so sad.
It is pretty sad.
Golly.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah, what a story. That's amazing. Rick Britton, always a great story on Friday afternoons with a little history. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.